We open Norm Nathan's Vault of Silliness and grab a recording from November 7th, 1995. The exciting Ed LeClaire is producing. Our fascinating guest is Troy James Hurtubise, a man who, while panning for gold as a teenager, was attacked by a grizzly bear. The encounter intrigued him so much that he started researching them while in college, and years later, he's nearing completion of his film, Project Grizzly. I don't want to give too much away, so you'll just have to stay tuned. There are lots of callers with great questions. Karen from Lexington, who also suggests that Norm should hold a premiere for the movie. Albert in his car on Route 2. Jim in the car. Bill from Winthrop. Mick, also in the car, going through a toll booth in New Hampshire. Tess from Somerville. Another Jim on his car phone. And guess where Warren is calling from? That's right, from his car. Time to curl up with your favorite teddy bear. Episode 11 begins now.
It's weekend night. He's beyond compare and so debonair. He shines so bright.
Here on BZ 103. Oh, please, don't turn that dial. He makes me smile. Norm Nathan's show. Norm Nathan's show. Norm Nathan's show.
I am that person that they are singing about, and I'm just so delighted. We're going to talk with a man who's in the middle of a fascinating project, filming really almost face-to-face grizzly bears up in northern Canada. We'll talk with him. His name is Troy James Hurtubise, and we'll talk with him in just 1 minute. But first,
here's a question.
It's Project Grizzly. I don't know if that's the final title, and I will find out in just a second. But he's filming it up in Canada, wearing a specially designed protective suit, and apparently comes very close to pretty much... Do you get pretty much face-to-face with the bears? May I call you Troy?
Yes.
Okay. This is a film you began... Now, are you in the middle of it now? This is a film that should be out when? Around January or the end of December or something?
It'll be... We just finished the last shoot up here a couple days ago, so you're looking at the middle of February before it's finally done, and then it'll run the film festivals around the world, and then you're probably looking at, maybe the summer it'll be on TV and that.
But all the actual filming of you and the bears and stuff, that's all done now?
Yes, everything's done, yeah. We just got back from the Rocky Mountains about 3 weeks ago.
Now, where was this filmed? Up in Alberta?
Yes, Alberta, the Rockies, yeah.
And you're from northern Ontario?
Yes, North Bay, Ontario.
Okay, because we get a lot of calls from up your way.
Right.
Yeah, our station comes popping in there. Anyway, I know you were you had a problem with a grizzly bear not too long ago.
As a young man, yes, I knowing nothing about grizzlies, I spent most of my teens out in the wilderness panning for gold and just, you know, out there living with the wilderness type of thing, and I was attacked by a grizzly, and... And then it didn't kill me. I became fascinated with the species and went to college and started writing about them and doing field research. And, you know, 10 years later, I'm out there doing research on the bears.
I love the way you say that, not having been killed by them.
Yeah.
I'm now doing research. You say that so casually. I would think that would keep you away from grizzlies for forever, you know, just...
Well, they're such an awe-inspiring animal. I mean, they're so fascinating. And you know, I looked at it in hindsight, and that's, you know, what really hit me was, you know, this animal could have killed me, you know, 10 ways to Sunday, and that it didn't. It was fascinating about the animal, and, you know, I spend my time now preserving the, trying to preserve the habitat and the species itself.
Is there a danger? Are they becoming an endangered species, the grizzlies?
Well, for the states, yeah, big time. If you look at the United States of America, excluding Alaska, you've got the lower 48 states. You've got about 600 to 800 bears left. You know, I mean, California had 10,000 bears not too long ago. When you look at it in hindsight, their state emblem is the grizzly, and they haven't got any left. So the states once held the most.
Oh, that's kind of interesting. That's the state emblem, and yet there aren't any.
And there isn't any, yes. Yeah. That's for sure. Alaska has a good population, and like I say, the lower 48 states has about 600 to 800.
How big is a grizzly?
Well, there's three species, basically. You've got your grizzly, which is Canada in the lower 48 states. You know, they could probably, a big grizzly is 600 to 700 pounds. That's monster. And then you've got your coastal browns. You see a lot on the documentaries. They're fishing up in McNeil River for salmon and stuff like that. They'll go 900 to 1,200 pounds. And then, of course, you have your Kodiaks, Kodiak Island. Big Bart, the movie The Bear in Walt Disney movies. Whenever you see that bear, that's Doug Seuss's bear. And he's 1,200 to 1,500 pounds. That's a Kodiak.
Now, the actual filming is done now. Tell me about that, because you wear a special protective suit and all that kind of stuff at least during the filming.
Yeah, that's basically what the National Film Board got interested in at the beginning, and that's what causes so much hype is the actual suit itself. In maybe 100 years, in the three fronts of grizzly bear research, Russia, Japan has a population of 3,000, and North America, not a lot's known about the grizzly, because even today, you can't get close to these bears to do any kind of research, because, of course, if things go awry, you either get killed or the bear gets killed. So I had, in my college days, watched RoboCop, the movie. And from there, I looked at it and said, excluding the superhuman capabilities, if I had the money and the time, I could build a suit that would enable me to take the pounds per square inch and the claws and teeth and that a grizzly could exert upon you. And 8 years later, and a couple hundred thousand dollars later, we have a suit that's a cross between a NASA spacesuit and RoboCop. It's bulletproof. It's shockproof up to 4,000 pounds per square foot. The suit has been run over with pickup trucks, and it's been shot at with Sabin slugs out of shotguns. It's unbelievable.
Oh, I've got a picture in front of me now of you wearing that suit.
Right.
And there's an interesting little note underneath that says, "The Lord is my inner strength. Of whom shall I be afraid?"
Yeah,
I'd be afraid of seeing you coming at me in the dark. That looks really powerful. That is wild. Now, you see, this, you're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars that it cost you to put together this?
I don't know what picture you're looking at. If it's from the book I wrote, that's where they're making the movie from, the book I wrote. That's the Ursus Mark V. That's the name of these suits that I make. There's seven, and we're on the sixth right now. This will be the one in the movies. This one costs $100,000 to put together. You're talking plastics that are right out of NASA. The metals used are titanium. There's onboard computers. I'm self-contained in the suit. I can't see out of the suit, so you have a camera and a TV set. Whatever the camera sees, I see. All kinds of specialized things like this.
So you actually did get really face-to-face with the grizzlies, and what the cameras then are with close-up lenses, and they're quite a distance away, I would guess.
Yeah, the backup crew, you know, the film crew and stuff like that that's actually filming it, they're like 300 yards away for the grizzly bear. And the black bear research, I don't wear a suit at all. I just go in, you know, I just with a buckskin jacket type of thing, and I sit amongst these bears, and we test deterrent sprays. That's what this whole movie's about, testing deterrent sprays on the market under actual fuel conditions. It's never been done before.
Now, wait a minute. Now, you're saying there were times you did not wear the suit, you just went in with the grizzlies?
No, not the grizzlies, the black bear. I'd be dead with grizzly bears. Black bears are a whole different species. They're very docile.
Oh, I see.
Though they can kill you, you have to know the bear, and I've studied black bears for almost 10 years. And we just went in with these sprays that you go and buy at corner stores and stuff like this, and they say they work against bears, but they've never been tested. So I take them into the field, and against black bears, I've been 5 inches away from 400 or 500 pound black bears. And you spray them under actual fuel conditions, and you see if it works or not. Then you move up to the grizzly, and of course you need the suit. Without the suit, you die. Because we know the sprays don't work.
I'm not laughing about the danger. I'm just laughing about the casualness with which you say that. Without the suit, you die.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people ask me that, but I've been doing this so long that, I mean, I live and eat with these bears, so it's become, and it could be bad. I could get killed one of these days with an attitude like this, but it becomes so, you've become so immune to the danger that it's just like second nature. It's like, you know, going out and having a cup of coffee at a coffee shop. You're just sitting amongst the bears type of thing, you know, because you've researched them so long in that. So it's usually a casual approach with me.
There's a lot of us, you know, who you can identify with beginning to understanding dogs and cats and obviously domestic animals that we don't have to worry that much about. That
right.
They all have individual personalities and all of that, and you almost get to know what they're thinking when you're with them long enough. Is that true when you're with a grizzly bear also?
If you're studying a particular animal for a long period of time, you get to know the animal. The problem with that is, of course, you have to also respect the animal in that it's a wild animal. So if you get stupid and you let down your guard, you end up dying. So, you know, you always have to keep your distance and you have to respect what these animals can do. They can outrun any human being alive, 35 miles an hour. They're 10 times your strength. They're 10 times your size, claws and teeth, very intelligent. So, yeah, you have to give them lots of leeway.
What have you learned about them in this latest film? Because you obviously knew a lot about them before you even started filming this document. If this is will be a documentary, obviously, about
animal. Actually, no. This is kind of a breakthrough. This is actually a full blown movie. They were going to go documentary, but there was so much involved in it that it's going to be on the big screen type of thing. It's an hour and a half type of thing, and then you have your commercials and that. It's like a movie documentary, but much more a movie. You know, it's so big screen type of thing, eh? And what you're going to learn is what the animals hopefully are all about, and you're going to get a gist for whether these sprays out in the market. These came from the States to begin with, so what you're going to learn is whether these sprays work for backpackers in the back country of Yellowstone National Park, Alaska. You've got a lot of wilderness in the States and a lot of bears, so it's going to tell you whether they're going to work or not. So it's an interest to the public for sure.
Okay, so you don't just sit in your car and roll up the windows when you're going through Yellowstone. You're talking about people who actually go out. Are there people like that who like
you go
out and mingle with the bears?
Yeah, millions and millions of tourists a year go through your national parks in the States and in Canada. And there's a lot of instances where, you've got backpackers and that to go for days and that. And a lot of people get injured and a lot of people, here in Canada, the last month, we've had 2 deaths and 8 serious injuries from grizzly bears in the last month. So there's a lot of people out there hunting, America, a lot of hunters, and they're told that these sprays work, and they carry them on their side at a cost of so much money, and they're told it works, and they go into the country with a false sense of security. And, of course, you're going to watch this this movie now, and you're going to see firsthand whether these sprays work or not.
Okay, and you're saying they do or not, or should we wait for the movie?
No, these
they do not wait. That's right. You said people go in there with this false sense of security with a spray they think is going to work that actually does not.
Yeah, these sprays don't work against dogs. I mean, these things are so bad.
Really? They're not even against dogs?
Yeah, you'd be better off with a can of Coke. Shake it up and squirt it at the bear. You'd probably have a better chance.
Okay, I was thinking maybe a dog biscuit or something, but that wouldn't work with bears either. Is the grizzly the most ferocious, the most dangerous of all bears? Is that and the biggest?
That's a tough one. You've got half the experts to go with the polar bear and half the experts to go with the grizzly with regards to size and that. But ferocity, a female grizzly, would stop at nothing to defend her cubs. Their ferocity is like second to none. Definitely. Polar bear is much more dangerous than that. Polar bear will kill you just as soon as look at you because he's a true carnivore. Grizzlies are omnivores. 80% of their diet is vegetation. But you come between a grizzly and her cub, and you're in serious, serious danger.
Yeah, that's interesting because a lot of animals are protective like that, and it's kind of interesting because the females, from what I gather what you're saying, can be even more ferocious than the male while she's protecting her young.
Oh, she would think of nothing of dying. It's common for a female to die defending her cubs against a larger male. They'll stop at nothing to defend her cubs.
Is that common? Would a male try to do damage to a female bear's cubs?
Oh, that's common. They'll kill them quickly. Very much like your lion in Africa will kill the cubs. A cub alone would be killed instantly in most cases from a male.
It's kind of interesting because I always thought, I always thought that that animals only they kill for food or they kill for some reason that only human beings killed just to kill. But are you saying that also bears just kill? Why would they?
Well, yeah. if we're not sure with the grizzly totally, but when you look at the lion that kills the cubs, that's done for the reason that once he kills the cubs, the female will come into heat right away, and then he can mate, you see. And also for competition and stuff like that, get rid of the cubs. With the grizzly bear, basically, I would imagine the same reason. If you get rid of the cubs, then she will not instantly, she'll come into heat much like the lion. But I would imagine that's the, I don't believe the animals kill just for the spite of killing. You know what I mean? It's,
right.
I think there's much more to it than that. But it's understanding the animals. You can't get close enough to these animals. Like something as simplistic as changing a radio collar in the winter, a winter den grizzly, has never been done. Because grizzlies don't hibernate, eh? A lot of people think that. That's a fallacy in that grizzlies are not true hibernators. They sleep like a Homo sapien, like man does. If you were to walk into an individual's room, most can detect that somebody's in the room. And same thing with a grizzly bear.
Okay, so if you're going to visit a grizzly and you think it's January, we're at the middle of the hibernating season.
Right.
You forget about it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they'll detect you before you're 20 feet from their denning site.
Oh. Would you be willing to take calls from listeners who would have questions to ask you, Troy? Would that be okay with you?
Sure. No problem.
Okay. Troy James, heard of bees and fascinating stuff, because I got some more questions I want to ask, too. But if you would like to talk with the Troy, our phone number is 617, the area code to Boston, 617-254-1030. We'll take some calls in just a minute or two. A documentary on grizzly bears, and has lived, been face-to-face with them. A little bit more post-production work, and then the film will be out. Before I get to the calls, incidentally, just about every line is lighting up. Everybody wants to talk with you. The first time you were face to face with a grizzly bear, the first time you had the suit on, this protective suit, did you have any doubts that maybe it wasn't all that protective?
Well, we haven't to date. Like we went out to the Rockies, Matt. We haven't tested the suit against a grizzly. Saw the grizzlies. I got into close proximity without the suit on, but to actually put the suit on and get out to the grizzly bear, we went out there for 2 weeks out to the Rockies just recently, and we didn't get the chance to get close enough to a grizzly for him to test the spray. And of course, the spray doesn't work. The bear comes through and actually attacks me. So we haven't gotten there. It's all up to the animal. We've been going 10 years at this, and still we haven't got a grizzly to come out the suit. I mean, if you have to picture the suit. I'm 5'8", 150 pounds. When I put the suit on, I'm 7'2", 320 pounds.
Oh, really?
So it's just a monstrous thing. So to actually get a grizzly to come at you to see if the suit is going to work for further research, that's been the biggest problem so far.
Can you actually walk in a suit that's heavy? And
yeah, it's thank God there's one more prototype to go. That'll probably cost $500,000. But the flexibility in this is very poor, in that you've got about 20% flexibility. I can walk in it. That's not a big deal. But if you get into heavy terrain like we were in, it's almost useless. It has to be flat terrain. And it was built for, there's the grizzly at a dead kill. I'm 50 yards off. The spray is hooked up to the right arm, and there's a trigger inside the hand. I come within the trigger zone of that grizzly, which is about 75 to 100 feet. It charges, I spray, and then, of course, I hit the ground, and the bear just goes crazy, of course, because the spray didn't work. And I'm okay, and the bear's okay. And you just keep repeating this to do your scientific paper to judge whether the spray worked or not. Unfortunately, you have to have very, very good ground, and we couldn't find it in Calgary. The bears we did find, we just said forget it, instead of taking the risk of the grizzly seeing the suit. And because it was the last day we actually finally got to see the grizzlies, and then you spooked the bear away, we figured we'll just go for shots of the grizzly bear itself. Eh?
But were you pleased with the shots that you have gotten?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Disney couldn't have did it better. I mean, wow, we've got some shots that are just absolutely spectacular. A coyote had come over the hill to take the dead kill away. It fought a coyote, had a wild herd of Mustangs come over the hill, and elk, and it was, ravens were flying overhead. It was just absolutely spectacular. We've got shots of black bears that never before in history have has this ever been recorded. Like instances where I've got 15 black bears actually walking over me, over my lap, brushing against my shoulder, and I'm just blowing spray at these bears left, right, and center. And I haven't got a suit on. So some really phenomenal footage.
Oh, I want to be like you. You're my role model, Troy. Let's take some phone calls. A lot of people want to talk to you, including Karen, who's in Lexington, Massachusetts. Hi, Karen.
Hi, how are you, Norm?
Good, thank you.
Hello, Troy.
Hello, how are you?
Good, you are my husband and my role model. We want to order bear suits. I'd like to ask you a couple questions. Could you describe for me, and Norm touched on it, could you describe for me if there's any differences between personalities, if there's any, I know the polar bear and the grizzly bear are more aggressive, and the black bear seem to be somewhat more docile, but is there anything you tell me about just the, we study bears quite a bit in the zoos and the like, and we always seem to look at the spectacle bears and the different types. Anything you can tell me about their personalities? Do they respond to humans? Are they warm? Or do they ignore humans when they're
I don't know how many people in America watched. It was all shot there, of course. Doug Seuss's Big Bert, and they filmed the movie The Bear. That was a spectacular movie.
That's my favorite movie.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that did a real bad injustice to the actual grizzly bear itself, because people came away with a false sense of security. They looked at these animals as cuddly and cute, and you can get up here, and I mean, here's a hunter that shoots it, then they track, they send dogs on it, and at the end, there he is sitting there, the bear's got him, he starts to cry, and the bear looks at him as if to say, well, I'll let you go. Grizzlies are beautiful.
Let you go, huh?
Yeah, no, just would have took his head off, and that would have been the end of the story. Now, I'm not putting down grizzlies, don't make them to be ferocity in that. That's not the way it is. They overplay these attacks too much, but what I'm saying is, you have an extremely dangerous animal here who is extremely smart. In Teston and Washington, they exceeded the great ape in intelligence. So a lot of people don't know that either.
Yeah, I've seen them on, they show those films from Yellowstone Park and how the bears can get in and figure out how to open up jars. And
oh, absolutely, yeah. The polar bear is far more dangerous.
Than the grizzly?
Yeah, the polar bear is the true carnivore.
Okay.
If you walked out on the polar ice and the polar bear sees you, you stand a greater chance of the polar bear coming up to you and wanting to eat you than you would a grizzly.
Okay.
A wild grizzly, you'd be lucky to see a wild grizzly. And if you did, he would see you before you saw him, and he would be long gone. Your danger comes, in most instances, with a female and cubs. When you surprise the bear, all she's doing is reacting to instinct to protect her cubs. And that's where the problem starts.
What about other types of bears? Do you know anything about, like, a spectacle bear? Or
Yeah.
Is there a difference between brown bears and black bears? Is there any traits that are different?
You're just the color phase. Everybody gets mixed up. They look at a black bear, and they look at a brown bear, and they say they're two different species, a black bear and a brown bear. Brown bear, black bear is what I'm talking about, are the same species, just color phases.
Okay.
Yeah. You have a Canadian grizzly. And a grizzly. A grizzly bear is the lower 48 states in Canada. That's a grizzly bear, Ursus arctus robilius.
Okay.
Then you have your coastal browns. And then you have your Kodiaks, which is Ursus arctus mittendorfi. A Kodiak is the same bear, just bigger in different habitat, but it's a subspecies. So you've got your Kodiak, your coastal brown, and your grizzly bear.
Okay.
Then you've got your polar bear, your speckled bear, and that. A lot of people get mixed up with the panda. Panda's not a bear. It's not part of the bear family. But for ferocity, a panda would outdo a grizzly and a polar bear and a black bear put together.
A panda?
Oh, they'll just kill you to look at you.
Wow. Have you read the book, The Cage?
No, I have not.
I think that you'd find it fascinating, because a lot of the things that you're talking about, the same thing. It's about a woman photographer who goes to up to Alaska, no, Canada. She goes to Canada, and she gets put in this cage to photograph polar bears, and she talks about how close the bears. It's a fascinating book. I think it is. I think it's a true to life book, and I think you would find it fascinating, especially for your research. Because
I'll have to look at that. The Cave, eh?
It's The Cave. It just came out in paperback, but I think it's a bestseller.
Great.
I think you'd really enjoy it. And Norm, I think what you should do is that I love your show, and I think that when Troy finishes his movies, you should have a nice premiere and invite all the bear fans to come down.
It sounds like a great idea. If I can work it out, we will. I don't know how possible that is, but maybe we can work something out.
That would be great.
Hey, you asked some good questions, Karen, and I appreciate you calling.
Enjoy your show. Take care, Troy.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye, Karen. Let's go to Albert, who is in his car somewhere around this area. How are you doing, Albert?
I'm quite well. I'm coming down Route 2 right now. It's a very nice ride out here, I'll tell you.
Now, I'm sorry, where are you?
I'm on Route 2, coming down through Belmont and Arlington now.
Okay, you're right down the street from us.
Sure, and I've been listening all the way from Amherst.
Okay, anything you want to ask Troy?
You know, I think I jumped in a little later, but what is the most prevalent bear here in New England?
In New England? Wow, you got me on that. I'm grizzly bears.
Do we have grizzlies in New England?
I don't think so, my friend.
I've seen black bear.
Yeah, lots of black. Yeah,
in Maine, up in central western Maine, up near the Canadian border.
I've never heard about bears in Massachusetts itself of any type.
Idaho, Montana, those lower 48 states. That's where you got. Now Washington, they say there's grizzlies up there. In Washington State, in that wilderness area, but I think the states are left with their mainstay is Alaska.
I have one other question for you quickly, and this is a little sports related. Our Boston Bruins. What is a Bruin? What type of bear is a Bruin?
A Bruin's a bear. Bruin means bear.
Right, but is it a certain type or?
No, it could be anything. But when you look at the Boston Bruins, you want to think grizzly, right? Mean machine.
I'd like to think that, but I saw the new logo. It looks more like a teddy bear for granted. Hey, well, thanks very much. I'm enjoying the show.
Thanks a lot, Albert.
Thanks.
Good to talk with you. Have another fellow in his car. This is Jim. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
Hey, I was wanted to ask him a question. When he was attacked by a grizzly, you said it was?
Yes.
Were you out fishing or something like that? Or
no, I was out panning gold up in the British Columbia wilderness. I was about 18 or 19, and I just finished panning gold. I was coming across a meadow, and we met kind of in the meadow type of thing. And we faced off for what seemed like an eternity, but it was probably only seconds. And he didn't do anything, but basically rammed me in the chest with his snout and threw me back 4 or 5 feet. And I got back up, and we went back at each other, kind of just looking. And, of course, I had just lost all my faculties, basically. And he just turned around, and off he went. Later, I had learned that when a CO came down, that my tent was probably 20 feet from his scratch mark, so I was right in his territory. And I believe now, after years of research, that it was a curiosity thing. I was in his territory, and he was just kind of checking me out.
Uh-huh. Great. All right, well, I'm enjoying your show.
Thanks a lot, Jim. Thank you for calling. Okay, 254-1030, area code 617. We go to Bill in Winthrop, Massachusetts. Hi, Bill, you're on the air with Troy James Herdebees.
Hi, I'm glad to talk to you. I spent some time at Kodiak, Alaska.
Right on.
And it was my understanding, you kind of confused me, Lil. I didn't hear the beginning of this. But the Kodiak bear was the largest land mammal in the country. I was in Kodiak. I saw them come down over hills, knock trees down, wipe out villages where they were winged. And I saw a couple of them that were nowhere near, which you're talking about grizzlies, that were half a gun as large. I'd just like your comment on that.
I'm with you in that in my research, I go right back to Lewis and Clark, and I see the Kodiak's the largest. But you can pick up encyclopedias, you can talk to experts that will state that the polar bear is the largest land terrestrial animal. And I tend to argue. The largest, weight the Kodiak has it, and size, overall size, like when you stand them up.
The largest head I ever saw in an animal.
What's that?
The largest head I ever saw in an animal.
Oh, absolutely. I've seen Kodiaks go 16 feet.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Standing
I
up.
I saw them too.
Oh, I would say Kodiaks in my books. Is the largest. Absolutely.
Now, what's the difference between them and a grizzly? How did just Kodiak?
The difference is they're a total different species in that they're a subspecies from each other.
Yeah.
The difference is, from what the experts state, is the actual size. I mean, in biologically speaking and things like that, no. Habitat and size is the difference between a Kodiak and a grizzly bear. I mean, your average grizzly bear, your average Canadian male grizzly bear, you're looking at anywhere from 400 to 600 pounds. You start talking about the big boys, the Kodiaks, and you're talking 900 to 1,400 pounds.
That's right. I saw them 1,200, 1,300 pounds.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
They're just monsters.
Frightening things. I saw one time come down over a hill. It had been winged. This is before it was a state, and it was winged, and it came down over a crest, and it took down trees, it took down cabins, it took down everything. It was frightening. I never saw anything like that.
Oh, yeah.
Life.
They have them on record going a ton. 2,000-pound bear.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for calling, Bill.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Let's just take a break, Troy. A documentary, a documentary really doesn't tell it all either, but a special film called Project Grizzly up in Canada and again, just about everybody wants to talk with you, Troy. So let's go to the lines and talk with, Mick. Mick, who's also in his car. Where are you, Mick?
Right now, I'm going through the toll booth in Bedford, New Hampshire.
Okay, you're on the air with Troy James Turtebeast.
Hi, Troy. How you doing?
Not too bad. How you doing, bud?
I had an interesting occurrence this past summer, my first and only time I've ever seen a bear. We took a little weekend, me and my wife, and we went up to White Mountain National Forest up by Littleton.
Right.
And we were down in the water, and I was, you know, enjoying myself, and I heard someone yell, bear, and when I looked up, there was a bear going from the brush up to these people's campsites, taking food, I mean, opening coolers. And it was like this bear had a knowledge from years of studying, like yourself, of how to open different containers without having to give himself a hard time.
Right.
And he was going back and forth, and there were people walking, like, within 10 feet of him, taking pictures of him, which I thought was insane to begin with. But he kept going back and forth, and he was rolling in the bushes, pouring Oreos in his mouth, and someone walked up to him, and he just jumped up and stomped both paws down at him for a second. And I was just wondering, what is that a usual reaction from a bear? Is that just saying, leave me alone, I'm eating, or is that...
Well, when they start stomping paws, that's an aggressive mode. That's the first sign that the trouble started.
Right.
And why they close all the dumps, particularly the first, it was in Yellowstone up in your area there in the States, is garbage-fed bears, which a lot of people don't realize, are the most dangerous of all bears. A wild bear is not as dangerous as a garbage-fed bear because they've lost their fear of man.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of our studies are with garbage-fed bears. And the mistakes people make is starting to take pictures around bears and stuff like that. You know, they figure, you know, nice, cuddly little bear, and, you know, stand up and take a picture. Now, they're very dangerous animals.
After he went through, like, I guess, 20 campsites, and people were following him like he was a circus parade or something. But he seemed to, like you said, he wasn't intimidated in the least by people. I think he was just aggravated that people were around him while he's eating. Then I went back up to my campsite and found my cooler tipped over and my gallon of milk stuck down in the bushes and my cheese was gone. But he didn't touch any of the meat, so I knew right then and there he has his own diet that he goes by from being spoiled, which is go for the sweets and go for the dairy products.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you talking to me.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Bye-bye, Mick. Nice to talk with you. I think sometimes you get fooled by watching cartoon characters like Yogi Bear and all that kind of stuff, and are always pictured as being little sweet animals that you would have no fear about, you know, and obviously that's not an actual depiction of them. I remember going through Yellowstone with one of my daughters when she was very little, and she had that attitude about, you know, had only seen bears when they were Yogi Bear and cute, cuddly little things, and then we saw our first bear as we drove through. And it's quite a different thing. It's quite disillusioning if you think of bears as only little sweet things you can hold next to your heart there and hug them.
And most people look at them like they're very cumbersome animals. I mean, if you take, you know, we associate speed in here in Canada with Ben Johnson, in the States Carl Lewis, and you take Carl Lewis and you put him on a conditioned track with sneakers and everything on, you put a grizzly bear beside him. On rough terrain, the grizzly's on rough terrain, and you hit that starting gun, and Lewis will do it in, what, about 9.93 seconds? The grizzly will cover at a dead standstill on rough terrain in 6.2 seconds. So grizzlies are fast, and they're smart, and they're big, and they got a lot of claw and a lot of teeth.
So don't try to hug them.
And most people get mixed up. Where a lot of deaths and injuries occur is people get mixed up, and they figure you play dead with a black bear, and you run or you fight a grizzly bear, and it's the total opposite. A black bear, you never play dead, and you never run. You show total aggression to a black bear in all instances, in my studies. With a grizzly bear, especially if there's a cub around, your best defense, of course, is playing dead. If it's a predaceous attack, well, you don't have to worry about it anyway because you're dead. In 99.9% of the cases, they'll usually come up behind you anyway and kill you. So if the bear wants to hunt you for meat, there's not really much you're going to be able to do about it. But that's very rare. And, I mean, since 1900, you've had 49 deaths around the world with grizzly bears. So, I mean, it's not... The problem is when they do attack, it's just absolutely hyped in the media because it's such a rare instance. In Africa, hippos kill more people each year than all the bears combined in the world.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Now, let's go to Tess in Somerville. Tess, you're on the air with Troy James Hurtubise.
Hello, Mr. Norman.
Hello.
Hello, Troy.
Hello.
Hi. I wanted to comment and then ask a question. I really like what you said about the importance of not sort of making wildlife a sentimental thing. I guess I learned very young watching nature shows and stuff that, you know, you'd see this fox hunt down a rabbit, you know, the whole food chain thing. And my father would always remind me that that was extremely kind compared to the way human beings are. And I think that we could have this sort of pantheistic approach to animals in general. And I think we forget the mystery and the majesty of wildlife. You know, it's not the same rationale and reasoning that we have as human beings.
Absolutely.
And it's a very powerful thing. But when you were saying about bears having this impression of, you know, all kids have teddy bears, and it's just a very universal sort of symbol. And one of the most wonderful bear stories I ever heard, where my daughter actually is homeschooled, and she does a lot of research in nature and stuff like that. And she said to me that polar bears, insofar as they're hunted, somehow instinctively know to cover their noses, because it's the one thing about them that stands out when they're being hunted.
Yes, on the hunt, especially seals.
Yeah, and
yes,
they'll cover their noses with their paws so that the hunters can't see their nose.
Yes, they'll lay on their belly and they'll cover their noses.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, that just blows my mind.
Yeah. Oh, extremely intelligent.
I'm covering my nose now. You can't see me. I think of a little kid, like, covering their eyes and,
yeah,
you know, thinking that because they can't see you, you can't see them. The question I actually wanted to ask you was, I'm interested in the relationship of the male and the female and how they go about mating and raising a family, and if they're monogamous or, you know.
Well, the male grizzly will stay with the female to a certain point. As the daddy rule, forget it. He's not going to do nothing. Once conception is made, it's delayed implantation. In other words, the egg will not start to produce until she's actually in the winter state inside the den, and then things start happening. That's how it goes. Mm-hmm. But the mating season is June, July, and what will happen is the male will stay with the female for a specific amount of time, but he'll still go to other females when he's done. I mean, that happens too.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, once he's done, his role's done. It's up to the female. They have one of the most lowest reproductive rate on land mammals, the grizzly, the females. And that's why they're
gestation period.
Yeah, that's why they're so endangered. She won't start to produce young till about 3 or 4, and then only every 3 or 4 years after that, the cubs will stay with her, usually for about 3 or 4 years.
And how long does she carry a baby? How long is gestation?
About 180 days.
Wow. Very interesting. I'm enjoying the show as usual.
Well, thank you.
Okay, good night, guys.
Good night, Tess. Thank you for calling.
Okay.
180 days is, let's see, I'm trying to figure out, that's how many months is that? That's about 6 months.
Yeah.
So despite the size of these animals, much bigger than humans, their gestation period, the at least the amount of time they carry a baby, is much less than a human.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether what I say proves anything or not.
And the cubs are totally helpless. You know, weighing less than a pound, hairless, blind. Yeah. And then just absolutely, wow, the growth is staggering, you know. And then you look at an 80-pound grizzly cub is a match for any man. So just some kind of animal, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, we'll go to another car. Jim is on the line with us, driving somewhere. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you, Norm?
Good, thanks.
Troy, I had a question for you.
Yes.
I was curious about the interaction of different types of bears. In other words, if you had a grizzly come across a polar bear by chance, what kind of reaction do you think you might?
That's a good question. That's happened once in recorded history that I have in my notes. A grizzly has mated with a polar bear, and you would wonder what would come out. And it was a grizzly bear. There was no white phase. There was no, you know, I would have assumed more so of a polar bear. But one did mate, and it was a...
a grizzly bear that came out. Basically, you looked in, and it was a grizzly bear. You couldn't see polar bear, right? But depending on where the borders are and that, I don't know how they would interact. I know with black bears, in grizzly country, you won't see a lot of black bears. They'll kill them just as soon as you look at them.
Really?
Yeah, they don't like black bears, and they're the big boys, and it's like, stay away from my territory.
Is there a way to tell can bears recognize that there's another bear out there as opposed to a lion? In other words, a bear is a bear. There's some kind of family of the same. Can they recognize that?
Well, that's a heavy question. Yeah, geez, I wouldn't know to comment on it with any kind of authority. Geez, I know a grizzly bear knows a grizzly bear. A black bear, geez, I don't know. I don't know if a grizzly looks and sees this bear at a distance type thing and says, geez, that's a black bear. You know what I mean?
Right.
A polar bear, well, you know, you really have to, I mean, the lower 48 states aren't going to come across polar bears, you know what I mean? So I guess where the terrain is, you know, the tundra and stuff like that, you could come in contact with polar bears. Now, how they would differentiate between them, I don't know. I really didn't study that area heavy duty, eh? But a good question. Yeah, that is interesting.
Well, obviously, there's a lot of bear lovers out there that are interested in bears.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great show, and I appreciate listening to you.
Well, thanks a lot, Jim.
I look forward to the video.
Okay, yes. I'll keep you in touch with that.
All right.
Okay, Jim. Okay. Bye-bye. Now, that's kind of interesting, you know, when you line up things for programs like this, you think, well, let's talk about the grizzly bear or just bears in general or whatever, but who would be interested? And as I mentioned to you, Troy, just about every line has been lit up since we asked for phone calls, and that doesn't happen all that often.
Yeah, I find when you even contemplate talking about grizzly bears, they're just like the romance and the ferocity mixed together. It's just, really blows the imagination of most people.
It really does. Lauren, we'll take just one more call. Lauren is in his car. Lauren, you're on the air with Troy James Herdebees.
Hi, Norm. This is Warren.
Lauren.
Warren, W.
Warren, I'm
yes.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
My question is more related to the encroachment of humans upon the area that the grizzlies and the black bears, you know, call their own. And one examples are the black bears in the New Hampshire area have become very aggressive in the camping areas up off the trails there. And I was wondering what Troy had to say about that as far as the change in the behavior of the bears caused by humans.
Yeah, fantastic question. Wow, you hit me right in the nail there, but I'm against provincial and national parks totally, especially national parks, totally against zoos, totally against national parks. You open up a national park to protect the animals. So what you're doing is you have grizzly bears in a national park, and you have tourists in the hundreds of thousands with chalets and ski resorts like Yellowstone and stuff like this, and Banff up here in Canada. And what's going to happen is you've got a massive influx of people coming through this bear's territory. And sooner or later, like it happens, especially this year, where the bear meets human, something happens, and in all instances, the bear dies. So what have you done? You start annihilating the population. I mean, it's like going to Africa, taking lions and tigers and bears, oh my, type of thing, and you open up a little national park in Africa and let people come in there and sleep in overnight. Well, what the hell do you think is going to happen eventually?
Well,
a lion's going to kill somebody, and then you're going to have to kill the lions.
Well, what have you found as far as the behavior of the bears, though, their behavior changing?
Absolutely, it changes, because when you have contact with human beings, you see, they start losing the fear because they come in contact with humans all the time. And then when there's food involved, now this is the deadly situation, and there's always going to be food involved. Doesn't matter how, if you ship it out, if you truck it out, people are going to have food on them. The bear starts to associate people with, or associate food with people, you see. They've lost their fear of the people in general, and they start getting closer, they start getting more brazen, and then you've got actual contact being made. And when that happens, the bear is either relocated or they kill the bear. I mean, you know, have you ever heard of, you know, the bear comes in contact with a human being, the bear is right, the person's wrong, the person's injured, they kill a person? No, it doesn't happen like that. They kill the bear.
Right, right, right. And it's in the East here, it's happening more often up in New Hampshire and Maine. Particularly in areas that they have for campers, you go along the trail and they'll have designated areas or something for camping, and they've had incidences where they, especially with two women within a week apart, I guess, up in New Hampshire, that they went in the tents on the women.
Yeah.
And I guess the women in the woods, especially on to that, I guess.
No, that's a fallacy. We did exclusive tests on that. With your black bear and your grizzly species, no conclusive evidence that your menstrual period and that will draw the bears in. Only polar bears.
Well, would it be a tendency of perfume or something based like that they'd go after?
It could be anything. I mean, it could be a barking dog. People sleep too close to the wall of the tent, and it's bulging, and the bear comes by. The bear's not interested in killing it in the tent, and it rubs against you. And what it does is it takes a nip. And then, of course, you figure, geez, I'm being eaten alive here. You know what I mean? There's all kinds of the food isn't properly stored. I've known people go in the bush. They'll sleep with their chocolate bars inside their sleeping bag. You know, I mean, a bear can smell a dead kill at 7 miles. I mean, their nose is just absolutely super. So there's a lot, and your point is exactly well made. You have encroachment. Too many people, not enough bears. And what's going to happen is eventually you're not going to have any bears at all because people always take over.
Right.
Hey, Lauren, got to get going, but thank you very, very much for calling. And Troy James Herdebees, this was a fascinating hour. I'm so pleased that you came on with us, and I wish you good luck on the film, and we look forward to seeing it.
Well, that one was as fresh and interesting as it was in 1995. Feel free to comment down below. Please subscribe and turn on notifications by hitting the bell. That way, you can be alerted when the next episode is ready for your ears. Closing the Vault and Riding the Radio Waves Home. For producer Ed LeClaire, our guest Troy James Herdebees, and our host Norman Irving Nathan. I'm Tony Nesbitt.